loving our neighbor. And I've got to be honest with you. I had a really rough week this week. I tend to talk a lot about how the world can be very dark, and I've even talked about it a fair bit in this sermon series, about how the world can be dark, but that as Christians, we are supposed to be a light in this dark world, that our love is supposed to be a light in this dark world. And I've acknowledged that it's not always the case, and that looking up Christian love on Twitter only resulted in my finding horrible examples of fear, hate, or dehumanizing the enemy. But the thing is, in the past couple of weeks, I found myself incredibly discouraged just by just how dark the world is and how Christians frequently fail to be a light. Earlier in the week, as I was writing down what I wanted to say this morning, I found myself writing that it feels to me like so much of what the Bible says about love and what I have been sharing on is just a hope of what the church could be and not what it is. The reality falls short. Sometimes it falls far short. And I've wrestled with that thought. Well, I've learned even more this week about the world and the Christians in it. Just this week, I learned that the current depression rates in the U.S., and ours are very similar, are skyrocketing, especially among young adults. Relevant Magazine details that a new report from the Gallup Institute found that the lifetime rate of clinical depression has reached a brand new high, and young adults aged 18 to 29 have been impacted the most. The report found that young adults have the fastest rising rates of diagnosed depression compared to any other generation. In 2017, an estimated 13% of young adults were being treated for depression. In 2023, that number has nearly doubled to 24.6%. The Gallup report itself says that the percentage of U.S. adults who report having been diagnosed with depression at some point in their lifetime has reached 29.0%, which is nearly 10 percentage points higher than in 2015. High depression rates are by no means the only thing that reveals to us that the world is dark, but it does reveal a bit about how dark the world is feeling to many. And it made me think of a conversation with someone I had a couple of weeks ago. This person was a Christian who was very concerned about the state of the world and the direction the things in the world are going. I could feel the concern radiating through the phone as we spoke. I could feel the fear. I could feel anger. What I didn't feel or hear was love or peace or gentleness. Those fruit of the Spirit that we are supposed to have, the evidence of the seal that God has given his people to reveal to the world that these people are his, that wasn't evident in the conversation. And my heart broke because I knew that this person was representing Christianity through their actions. And I knew that what would be coming across to people not of our faith was fear and judgment, not love. I didn't know what to do after that conversation except pray. Well, think about it a lot, and then pray. Then, significantly worse, this week I was online and I read about a report that was released this week by Illinois's Attorney General about the results of an investigation into allegations of abuse by Catholic clergy, finding that 451 clergy abused nearly 2,000 children since 1950. Before the investigation, they only knew about 103 individuals that had been named in the church in 2018. There are no words for the horror this is. This is evil. The abuse, the cover-ups, evil. It's so evil that I know our instinct is to distance ourselves from it, to list all of the reasons that we are so far from removed from these people. But if you bear the name of Christian, these evildoers also bear our name. Calling out evil doesn't erase it, but not being able to erase it doesn't mean that we should sweep it under the rug. Evil was perpetrated by those who carried the name of Christ. Evil in the abuse that occurred, and evil in the fact that it was covered up, dismissed, minimized, allowed to continue. My only comfort in this? There's a passage in Matthew where Jesus is recorded as talking about the Son of Man returning in his glory and separating sheep from goats. So in Matthew, it says this. As Jesus talked about the Son of Man coming in his glory and being on his throne, and he's separating people, he then says this. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you fed me. I was thirsty, and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me into your home. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you cared for me. I was in prison, and you visited me." Then these righteous ones will reply, "Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? Or a stranger and show you hospitality, or naked and give you clothing? When did we ever see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the king will say, "I tell you the truth, when you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were doing it to me." And then he goes on to say the opposite for those who refuse to help the least of his brothers and sisters. He says that they refuse to help him. When I hear this and I think about some of this news that I learned this week, I understand this to mean that while evil was perpetrated against these children, Jesus says that it was as if it was done to him. What we do to others, it is as we do to him. There are very few times in which I will preach of God's judgment. I believe that the Bible speaks more about grace and forgiveness than judgment. But in times like this, to know that when there were children who were harmed by those who should have been caring for them, those that they should have been able to trust, and then that harm was hidden and allowed to continue happening to others, it's reassuring to know that Jesus will consider it as something that was done to him. That is how much he will care about it. And it is an important part of our faith that through Christ all can be forgiven. And I said last week, and I do believe it, that our own ability to forgive demonstrates the grace of God. However, forgiveness does not erase harm, and it does not erase our obligation to care for the most vulnerable, to care for those who have been harmed. God can heal, and he can forgive, but that does not erase our charge to care, to love as Christ loved us, to love self-sacrificially and for the benefit of others, especially the most vulnerable. I would rather this type of evil had never occurred at all, 100%. But it is a comfort that Jesus takes the refusal to care for the vulnerable personally. Now, that was a bit of a rabbit trail, but I think it's an important one, because we cannot avoid talking about these things in church if we want to make sure that churches are safe places, the safe places that they should be. If we want to ensure that we are caring for the vulnerable, we have to talk about what sometimes happens to the vulnerable. My initial point for sharing this story was to talk about how dark the world was feeling for me this week and how discouraged I was about the fact that Christians, as a whole, we don't seem to be doing much about the darkness. And in the above case, we are actually adding to it, even though we should be lights in the world. But also, I had the question, why? Why do we as a whole, as an overall big unit of Christians, seem to be failing in this whole supernatural love category? Why have we instead managed to develop such a horrible reputation? If we can't change that imperfect or even sometimes evil things happen by those who carry the name of Christ, then why do we not at least see in general that care for the vulnerable? I think partly we don't see it because we have, I don't want to make too many generalizations, but at least in the faith that I have most experienced in evangelical circles, we have made Christianity solely about a restored relationship with God and not about restored life. We kind of skip a step. Yes, the entire Bible tells the story of the restoration of relationship with God, but it doesn't just tell the story of our individual restoration. It tells the story of the work of Christ to bring restoration between God and all of creation, all of people, but not just people, the world. The Bible tells a story about the fact that we are loved as we are, but then there is this kingdom life that we are born into when faith grows in our hearts. It's not just faith about who Christ is and the fact that he died and rose again, but it's faith about who he has created us to be. And the faith in the way of life that we are invited into, that everyone is invited into, that we are enabled to live out. A few weeks ago, we had David Hessler as a guest speaker. And he shared from 2 Peter 1:3, a verse that says that God has given us everything we need for life and godliness, or in some translations, godly life. He had a share about those that we know who have managed to live life well, and those that exude godliness. Many of us had people who came to mind, and we described some of why it seemed that they really knew how to live life, why they gave off a godly impression. And I recall many of us giving answers that coincided with the fruits of the Spirit: love and peace, patience and kindness, gentleness and self-control. Then we were asked to consider what needed to happen for us to be more like that ourselves, for our lives to demonstrate true life, for our lives to demonstrate godliness. I'm not sure if any of you received answers to the question. This week, as I knew that I was going to be sharing again on Christian love and what it should look like, I was just so overwhelmed with the need of this world and what felt like the general inability of the church to live out kingdom life. In this, what matters is faith expressing itself in love kind of way. And then for inspiration, as I was honestly feeling quite down, I decided to read a book written by someone who exudes living life in godliness in the way of love. I read Love Does by Bob Goff. Love Does, the book, was the light that I needed in my week. I was overwhelmed by the dark world, wanting reassurance that this stuff that we talk about love isn't just talk, but truly can change the world and turn the world upside down in the best way. The book is a collection of stories, very entertainingly told, that demonstrates a lesson that Bob has learned about life and love and faith. Love Does is an ode to the supernatural kind of Christian love that was poured out on Bob when he was a young kid who really needed it, and the lessons that Bob has learned as he's done what he can to live out Christian love himself. One of the stories he tells is a story of being a junior in high school, so that's about grade 11, and he decided he was going to leave home. He was going to quit high school. He was going to move to a different town. He was going to get a job. He was going to become a mountain climber. He never climbed mountains before, but why was that going to stop him? This was his life plan. But before he left town, he decided to stop at the house of an older friend just to tell him that he was leaving. And when he told the friend his plan, the friend was surprised, but he didn't question it. He didn't judge it. He didn't try to talk him out of it. He grabbed a sleeping bag, and he said, "I'm with you." The older friend came along for the drive. It didn't take long, just a few days. But even as the ill-thought-out plan was failing, the friend just reiterated to Bob that he was with him. It wasn't until days later, when the plan had ultimately failed and Bob had decided, "I guess we should go home," and they did return home, and Bob was dropping this friend off at his house, that he realized that his friend who had come with him had literally just gotten married and had sacrificed his honeymoon to make sure that a kid who really needed someone had someone with him. Bob talks about how knowing that this kind of person was with him made a huge difference for him, and he connects that with the fact that Jesus is frequently called Emmanuel, or God with us. The young man that stuck with Bob did so because of his faith in God, who has come into the world to be with him. That was the first story in the book that made me cry. Not every story was like this, but overall, Bob's stories demonstrated the difference that love makes in our dark world and the difference that faith expressed in love makes. In the past couple of weeks, I've shared this diagram of love, hope, faith, hope, love, that I kind of developed after reading Out of the Seats and Into the Streets by Ron Dulzer. It felt like the stories that Bob was telling in his book was like a map of this trajectory. It demonstrated that the love that he experienced from others gave him hope and brought him to faith. Faith of what the world could be, of who God was. And then learning how to love in that supernatural way, it required faith. It required the hope of the world that God wants for us. I collected many great quotes about what Christian love looks like from Bob's book, Love Does. But one of the biggest points that he made was that he reached a point in his faith where he realized that all he was doing was learning about love and not actually loving. And by not actually loving, he wasn't actually learning. Bob says, love does. I seem to be missing. Oh, no, I didn't write it down. So some of the quotes of what he said. Bob says, but the kind of love that God created and demonstrated is a costly one because it involves sacrifice and presence. It's a love that operates more like sign language than being spoken outright. He also says, love is never stationary. In the end, love doesn't just keep thinking about it or keep planning for it. Simply put, love does. Love, Christian love, requires action. Recently, I was having a conversation with a group of people that I believe love our city well. And I was asked about my own fear and hope. And related to the conversation we've been having, I said that my fear was about my own limits, that I'm not enough and I do not have enough to offer in the work that I feel that I'm called to do, but that my hope that was in my life, I would be able to be a light to those whose lives had been so dark that they could not even believe that God existed. My hope that was that somehow, despite my limits, by my being present, by my being with them, my ability to represent the presence of God and the love of God because he is in me through his Spirit, and I am with them, that they would be able to experience his love and maybe, just maybe, they would think, oh, maybe God does exist. Maybe he does care about me. And it was a really nice sounding answer at the time, and I truly did mean it when I said it. I meant it with my whole heart. The difficulty is, the answer has haunted me since I gave it. It's haunted me because I've wondered, how in the world am I ever going to share this kind of light if I'm not even in a place where in my life where I'm in proximity of those who need it? What if I only ever talk about this kind of love instead of actually living it? Then I'm a part of the church that's missing the mark. Another thing that happened this week, it was an eventful week, Christian news-wise, is that Tim Keller, pastor, theologian, and author, he passed away. Many people were sharing some quotes of things that he had said in his honor online after he'd passed. The following quote was particularly biting, I thought. Tim Keller said in his book, Prodigal God, that Jesus' teaching consistently attracted the irreligious while offending the Bible-believing religious people of his day. However, in the main, our churches today do not have this effect. The kind of outsiders Jesus attracted are not attracted to contemporary churches, even our most avant-garde ones. We tend to draw conservative, button-downed, moralistic people. The licentious and liberated, or the broken and the marginal, avoid church. That can only mean one thing. If the preaching of our ministers and the practice of our parishioners do not have the same effect on people that Jesus had, then we must not be declaring the same message that Jesus did. Perhaps the why we attract a different kind of crowd than Jesus did is related to this question or this wondering that Bob mentions in his book. After a certain experience with a Christian, he said, I wonder if maybe all Christians operated this way? I didn't think so, because most of them I had met up until that time were kind of wimpy and seemed to have more opinions about what or who they were against than who they were for. Does my life demonstrate who I am for? does your life demonstrate who we are for? Are we being a light in this world? Is our faith being expressed through love? Is God and his kingdom, the life that he has called us to, the life he gives us power to live, is that shining through in our actions? I felt convicted this week because I feel like the answer for a lot of us, the answer for myself, was no. At least not as much as it should. I quoted less scripture than I have recently this morning. And partly because I've quoted so many scriptures about love in the past few weeks, but also partly because much of what is recorded in the Bible of what Jesus said about love is infamous. The story of the Good Samaritan, loving our neighbor, the golden rule. We don't necessarily need to hear it again. We need to learn how to do it. Bob Goff, someone earnestly trying to live it, says that it's about doing. It's about going into the world and trying to love people. And in that, we are changed. He said it's not about being perfect. And I watched this interview that he gave this week, and he talked about it being quarter point turns. So I am in the military, and they like to teach you drill. I mean, they yell at you to do drill. And there's this one thing where you do a little turn like that, and that's all you're doing. And when they're making you practice, they might make you do the whole thing, all the way around, little tiny turns until you get to the direction you're supposed to get. And so my question this morning is, what would it look like for you to take a quarter point turn towards becoming a person who expressed your faith through love? We love because he first loved us. That is how we learn to love. Jesus came into the world to be with us and then did not put his own pride or his own desires first, but gave his life for us. One of my favorite concepts of what happens when Christians gather, why we even have church at all. Yes, there is the connecting with each other, there is encouraging each other, but there's this idea that as we gather, we remind ourselves of the story that we live in. The story of God, the story of what Christ has done, and the story of what we are called to. So this morning, we are going to close by having communion. It is a slight change. During COVID, we did the little thing with the tiny little cups where you'd peel things. And now we are back to having a glass of juice and some bread. There is a gluten-free little plate there if you need that. And so what we'll do in a minute, we will have some music play and people can come up. We would invite you that you can pour juice for the person behind you just as an act of service to the person who comes behind you. So you can take some juice and you can take some bread. And because it's been a while, and also I always feel like there's this, I try to remember the way that we used to do things and then the way things I've always done as I'm growing up. So we'll do a bit of a combination. And if you have someone that you would like to take the elements with, someone you're sitting with or whatever, after you take the bread, you can sit down and you can just, together, you can take the bread or juice. Or if you want to wait until everyone sits down, there will be a point where I will say, let's take the body and let's take the blood. You don't have to wait for that, but if you would like to, you can. So we will participate shortly in communion. And we will remember the fact, we will remember the love that Jesus had for us, that his body was broken for us, that his blood was spilled for us. Yes, so that we might be forgiven, but also so that we might live, so that we as well might love, so that we would be his body in the world. So I am going to invite Allie to play some music for us, and then invite you all to come and take the elements.